Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Hello all. I am our host for today's call. My name is Devin. I'm calling from Orange County, California. Welcome to our weekly Global Awakening Call. Today our guest speaker is Gwen Austin. In a few minutes, our moderator, Molly, would engage in a deep dialogue with our guest speaker, Gwen Austin. And Gwen, welcome to our call one more time. And by top of hour, we'll roll into Q&A and a circle of sharing. Our moderator today is Molly. Hi, Molly. Welcome to our call. And how exciting that you joined Solid Space Volunteers as well. Good morning.
How are you today? I'm doing wonderfully. Thank you. It's great to be here with all of you.
And Gwen, thank you again. How honored we are for the opportunity to have you on the call. And as we are starting the call, Molly, our theme today is deepening our understanding of the homeless. Molly, what are your thoughts on the theme of our call?
Well, first of all, I just really thank you for the opportunity of sharing with Gwen and all of you today, and just really honor Gwen's life of service. And when I spoke with her the other day in preparation for setting this space with everyone, there were some key essence symbols that you've already touched on, Devin, including the sense that people's lives matter. And each of us have an essence and a wish to be heard and seen. And so I know that Gwen and I are probably going to get into that in just a moment, but I think I'd like to just go ahead and share a bit. If some of you haven't had a chance to just take a look at the call page itself, there you'll find the framing question, deepening our understanding of the homeless, which in my belief applies to all of us, deepening our understanding of ourselves as well. And a bit about Gwen and her work, which I'd like to share just a bit about right now. She's a community builder and a social justice advocate with Building Opportunities for Self-Sufficiency, which is acronym BOSS, self-sufficiency.org, an organization in Berkeley, California, that helps homeless and disabled people achieve health and self-sufficiency, as well as fighting the root causes of poverty and homelessness. BOSS was founded in 1971 by a group of volunteers who responded to the needs of mentally ill individuals being released to the streets by state hospital closures. Today, BOSS is an award-winning organization that helps people who are facing deep poverty and multiple special needs. I'm going to go ahead and let Gwen share with us to open together today a bit about her own journey, because I think it frames deeply what the conversation is going to be together today. So Gwen, just a warm, deep welcome to you, and such an honor to be hearing from you and listening deeply to you and with you today. Welcome again on behalf of the Awaken Calls, and share a bit about your own journey, if you would, that led to some of these core realizations, one of them being surrendering to one's highest purpose, and also that all lives matter. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, everyone. And thank you, Molly, the moderator, the original moderator, so pointedly put about reaching out and looking at someone who is homeless, because what happens is they find themselves invisible. So with him speaking to her and taking the time to speak to him, as a matter of fact, just the other day, I spent about 30 minutes speaking to a full group of homeless people who were living in the park in Berkeley. But so I spent time with them, looked at them in their eyes, asked them what they needed, et cetera, and then they put down the barriers and they opened up to me. So I agree with the original moderator who said, yeah, he took the time to talk to her, and that means a lot. So my journey is I'm originally from Chicago, Illinois. I moved to Berkeley And but while in school, I was telling Molly that my journey sort of opened up. I started out, I went back to school in my 30s, and I was going to school to be an English teacher because I'd always wanted to be an English teacher from the time I was in kindergarten. I'd had some wonderful mentor teachers, and they just sort of, like, that's where I'm going, that's where I'm headed, that's my role in life, and, you know, you can't force me off that road, and that's just it. So from that, and I got in college, and, of course, things had changed a little bit once I got in college, and so the doors started to open up to other, sort of majors help me to build a character, so to speak, which I already had one. I'd already worked in corporate America for quite a bit. And but so I went back to school so I can get my degree. I have a double major in education and English. And so I'd done all my credits. I'd done my field work. I did the certification, and then I had a couple of more credits left that I needed to take a class. And so I took a social justice class, an introduction to social justice. And from that moment, I think I was mentioning to Molly, from that moment, it sort of opened me up in a way I hadn't been opened up. And what happened was it touched on my truth. It touched on my authenticity. It touched on my realness. And I didn't know it was there because I worked in for-profit industries for so long that it sort of, I don't know if it blinds you to what the realistic world is all about. And do we sort of set ourselves up for just, you know, making money and that's really it and not caring about anything else in the world? But that class in and of itself sort of, it was already there. It just sort of watered the plant because it was just sitting there, dormant, I think. And that class, and although we learned a lot about theory and philosophy, but that wasn't it. It was about the lives of people who were treated unjustly and how our society sort of, you know, sets us up for failure in some respects. And we don't pay enough attention to those who are unable to take care of themselves for the most part or unable to navigate through life's challenges with sort of disabilities of sorts, you know, and that can mean come from a lot of places. So I looked at the justice system differently, and I looked at people differently, and I said to myself, oh, my God, I'm feeling something I had never felt before. So this just was like sort of the opening. And it hadn't even started, but I could feel it. And it hit me at a point in my life where I'm moving in another direction. And that sort of stopped me in my tracks. But I think what happened was because I always knew that there was something missing, and I think a lot of people can relate to this, when there's something sort of missing, you can't quite put your finger on it, and then something sort of happens serendipitously, you know, where you're sort of down and out about something or you are sort of hanging on past hurts or pains or and you sacrifice some things so that other people can grow and so you sort of, you know, stay in one place. But this was a moment, a real true moment, and I realized almost immediately that my purpose is to do something different. Mm. Now, did it happen at that moment? No, because I was still fighting sort of to be this English teacher and, you know, to work at the level where, you know, to sort of mold young people's minds to, you know, speak better or to learn better and to build character better and all those things. But it kept pushing me toward this way. It wouldn't stop. So what I did, after I kept, like, saying, no, I'm going this way, and it seems like to me, from what I was feeling, God was saying, no, I'm moving you this way. And I kept pushing back and saying, no, I'm going this way. Finally, as Molly mentioned, I surrendered. I think once I surrendered, and I've surrendered in many, many times, many places, but for that moment, as far as what I was going to do for the rest of my life, as far as work or as far as something I enjoyed, I found a purpose because I was always saying I need a foundation, I need to be anchored, I need to have a purpose in life. And that sort of spoke to me in a way where it said, okay, stop, listen, and then let me guide you, because I didn't know how this was going to play out. I had no clue. It wasn't on my radar ever, because I never even thought about people who are poor that are, you know, that need help. But then it was an awakening, so to speak, you know, no pun intended, but it was an awakening. I just sort of once I surrendered, I just sort of like let it flow the way it needed to flow, and I didn't fight it anymore. And from that not fighting it anymore opened up a whole lot of opportunities for me. And I'm not talking about opportunities where there's all this money, or I'm just talking about opportunities to help people realize their truth, whatever their truth is. Their truth is not my truth. My truth is mine. I own that. So help my part of my role, I believe, in as a steward of this land, is to help people in a very encouraging and positive way to realize that being homeless is not does not define who you are. There's so much more to you, and so I encourage them in many ways because everybody's different, and I take them through baby steps, and I look at them and talk to them. So I give them resources. I give them, you know, who to call. Do I need to call someone for you? I try to help them as much as I can. So I think the key to all that is help. When I help someone who is sort of, you can't, sometimes you don't see it right away, but when you listen, and I think someone mentioned that, when you really, really listen to someone, you can hear what they're not saying. And when you don't hear what they're saying, they mean they're really asking you for something, but they're ashamed and they have all this stigma around them. So some people don't even open up to tell me they're homeless. But when they keep talking to me and I keep talking to them, I get a sense, okay, and you know, I always flush it out. I'm like, okay, so how can I help you? I'm not saying that, you know, that you're something's wrong with you, but let me help you the way I can help you. And then from that moment, everything just sort of comes out, and then I know what to do. So my journey has been one that is very introspective and very, very intrinsically embedded in my soul, because I can feel it every day I wake up. I have one thing that if I don't do one thing for one person in the day, then my day is not fulfilled. And that one person could be just to put a smile on someone's face and say, good morning. And a homeless person appreciates when you look them in their eye and you talk to them like they're a human being, and that's like a throwaway. So my mission is to sort of, as a community builder and a social justice advocate, I advocate on their behalf a lot of times, but I often want to sit and talk to them one-on-one, families, children, especially mothers with young children.
And
so
that's
sort of
my
journey in a nutshell. I hate to go on and on, but yeah, that's been pretty much in a nutshell.
That, to me, Gwen, points to one of the symbols of what I see as your journey and what might be a key symbol for this conversation, and that's essence and the importance of not only what you honored in your own journey, finding essence and your own gift back to life and to humanity, but also the journey of understanding that all lives matter and that everyone has a voice. And
right.
From that springboard, I'd love it if we might go even deeper into the space that you mentioned the other day of that's kind of framed around the idea of spare change to true change. And maybe if you'd share a story from your own experiences, give us a ground level view of one or two folks that you've worked with and how they see real change from their view and how you see it. And then maybe we go into a little bit of the root cause conversation
right.
as well.
So spare change, you know, someone always has a sign that, you know, need change, need money, give me a quarter, you know, all I need is a dime. And then, you know, so I work with a lot of organizations. And then I've done my own research, of course, and I've done a lot of stuff when I was in school about different ways that to help people, and I mean truly help people. Now, the spare change part is we should stop, and this is what I hear, and this is what I've experienced. So the spare change is good. You know, you give them something, but you know what? They're back the next day asking for that same amount of money, the very next day, because they spend it almost immediately, and we know why. So if we really collectively as a community and as our and I work sort of directly and indirectly with our legislators as well, so we really start focusing on sort of the root causes, you know, we'll get into that soon, but the root causes of why people are either poor, you know, poor is subjective, but homelessness is not. Poverty is subjective, but homelessness is not. So we can, if we collectively can move in a way with our policies and our legal law and stop obstructing the way we handle our people who are poor and are homeless, then I think the real change comes in that. Because the spare change is very, very temporary. It's like putting a Band-Aid on something that will never, ever heal. So let's really work, really let's go underneath. Okay, we know that in the 70s that there was a lot of hospital closing, and it sort of pushed a lot of people out on the streets, and the families couldn't deal with that because the hospitals were dealing with all that. So now the shelters are booming. So where are we going to put these people? So there's only a limited amount of space for shelters and emergencies and transitional housing and all that. So that means that most of the people are now on the street. So on the street, they get some help from the government, maybe $200-$300 a month, you know, to sort of take care of, you know, their life, you know, to get fed, to get a shower, to get clothing and things like that, to live daily, to breathe. But that's not enough. So if we're continuing just putting a Band-Aid on things, which means spare change, that means we're not really dealing with the real root cause of why people are homeless and why we need to get everyone housed in a way. Because a lot of it, the longer people are on the streets, the more we start to see the mental illness part really starts to take hold of them. And then we start to lose them because now their community is their streets and their parks and their benches and the bridges. And that's not how America. We're supposed to be a country that takes care of our people. I mean, that's sort of my the thing that really irks me so much about the work that I do, and the challenges that come with it. Because we're not working collectively, and because we're such a country that likes to separate so much instead of working together to try to make the wholeness of a country. Yes, everyone's not going to be able to work. We all know that, for whatever disability there is. So how do we take care of those people? So I'm more concerned about moving away from the spare change and really doing the real work, which is not easy work. So we need committed people, and I think everyone on this earth has a responsibility to sort of move our world into a place. Where we're loving each other no matter what the differences are. And a lot of times the homeless are so discriminated against, there's such a stigma that some of them just hide away and you never see them. Like there's a whole host of people in rural areas that we never get a chance to even see and talk to, but they're there. So we deal more in the urban areas where they're more visible. And they, you know, you push them one way and they come back. You know, you can't, where are you going to push them to once you push them? Where are you going to push them into the ocean? No, let's start pushing them and then start hopefully taking care of them in a way that they can help to take care of themselves. But we don't do that collectively. So our organization does that quite a bit. You know, we have lots of locations that do that. But to make it very simple, I think that if we can just understand that for the most part, and our youth is another big thing that's happening right now. They're in the street because foster care they're aging out and they have nowhere to go. They don't have any skills. They can't get a job. They can't get housing. And that's a whole other layer. Then we have our seniors, you know. So it's very complex, but we can get everyone housed. I just know this. They don't have to live on the streets the way they live on the streets.
And Gwen, just as what Devin shared a bit at the top of our time together,
Right. Do you
have someone that you can give voice to that you've worked with directly?
Absolutely.
And share a bit of a story.
Yeah, there's two or three of them, but one comes out that really stands out. It was a single mom with three children. So she entered our program. She entered it sort of not in the correct way. And what I mean by that, is there's a process to get into one of our programs, and you go through social services, through the county and all this stuff. But she had been living in her car. Well, first of all, she had been living in a family home that state inspectors came out and said it was not livable anymore because it needed so much repair. So almost every family member moved out of the house and left they went other places, but she had three children. So what happened with her, she ended up, you know, staying in a hotel for a minute, using all her funds, staying in her car with her children for a minute, going back to live in a hotel, helping social service, helping, giving her money. But she ended up knocking on one of our doors with that we don't do. You know, someone told her about one of our locations, you should go there. Well, we don't open the door and just let you in, even if we have, you know, there's a process. But this particular woman with her children was so persistent, she kept coming back. And she came back on the one day where her family had just got an apartment. And they said, you know, if you just wait a minute, the manager of the place said, and I was there, as a matter of fact, I just happened to be there. I'm like, oh, how can we help you? You know. And so from that, we developed a sort of a friendship. But she said, I've been homeless for a year. I don't have any place to go. I keep coming here because I don't know where else to go. I'm living in my car. So she came, and just so happened the very next day, she left a number, and we called her and said, you can bring, you know, we have an apartment. It's a transitional housing place. So it's part shelter and part transitional housing. So she came to live with us. Now, she had she was mad at the world, literally, just totally upset that she's in this predicament. She's got these three children. The dad, I'm almost pretty sure, this is the statistics, that the men are not around for the most part, and the men sometimes are either in prison or they're just not being an effective father. But we're changing that narrative as well as we speak. So she came into our program, and we talked almost on a constant basis. I also teach a social justice class at this particular facility. So she would come into the class because it was during the day right before her children would get out of school, and she would come to my class, then go pick her children up, and we would talk. And I could see her growth because every time I would see her, I would sit down and talk to her about, how are you doing? How can I help you? Let me help you. Whatever it was, she had lots of different concerns, and she was very angry initially, because the system had done this to her. And my job was to say, no, it's not the system. We're going to work at trying to get you and your children housed. So what happened was, and their classes, we offer all kinds of parenting classes, classes how to get jobs, classes how to present yourself, classes on how to be sustainable when you do get a job and or an apartment, so that this is not recycled back into the shelter living. So we give them all those two, and it may take a year or two. For her, it took a year. So for her, she came to me and she said, I got a job with the school system. So getting that job with the school system, then she got an apartment, which would just happen maybe 4 months ago. She got an apartment. So she gets an apartment, and what we do, we help them put furniture in it. So I helped her get furniture in her house. So now she calls me and tells me how happy she is. So this is from grassroots to nothing. She had absolutely nothing to where she has a job. She now has a house. And she said one thing she learned about our organization and what she took with her is how to take better care of herself so that then she can take better care of her children. And see, part of my journey is coming from a mother, from me, who abandoned us, and I saw her pain, and I sort of tried to take her pain away, and I couldn't do that. I had to deal with me, and I didn't. I didn't do that very well because I wanted my mother's affection and love so much. And I would always tell her all the time, like, make sure that you give attention to your children, because what they need most and more than anything, this homelessness is nothing to them. What they need is you. What they want is to hear you. They want to see you. They want you happy. And with you being happy and doing self-care, then your children are happy. And sure enough, she flourished. She's doing well. And so that's just one big story, because a lot of stories are not like that because they're individual stories. But this is a family who I sort of took a liking to. And I knew that there was something about this woman, that her drive and her energy was just like, I am not going to be homeless for the rest of my life. And that's what we tell people. This is not about a lifelong homeless issue. It's about a temporary place for safety, a place to gather your thoughts, a place to sort of reignite yourself, and maybe to find something else about yourself that you didn't know prior to being homeless, which is also what drives you, who you are as a person.
The realization that I'm having and had the other day with you in the space that we shared was one of just how much your own story And this is a perfect seg, actually, into taking maybe even a deeper dive into the consciousness and even what might be called the spirituality of all of this in the common river that we share of essence and of understanding ourselves and our collective and unified humanity. And that would be what I heard in your story around your own mother and how perhaps that wounding that you experienced became the very service that you are now presently sharing so selflessly.
Absolutely.
And how that also translates to the very story that you just shared. So if let's dive into the possibility that our wounds might be our greatest gifts.
Yeah, you know what? I truly agree with that. We can go through life blaming others for what happens in our lives. And we stay stuck on something that hurt us or has wounded us so bad that we don't see the sort of the fruit that's sitting or that's right in front of us. And so we put blinders on to the goodness that sort of comes through us because we think we haven't taken care of the wound, the people or the thing or the whatever that has hurt us. But I think in that hurt, and I don't know how this manifests with other people, but I believe in that hurt comes something that's even more beautiful than that, but you don't realize it because it's a journey. And that journey can start from someone, hit you when you were in the third grade and you just never got over it, so you hate that person for the rest of your life. But then there's a journey that comes along. Okay, that pain was about what? What was that pain really about? Was it about the hit? No, it was. It almost always goes a little deeper than that. So it's about sort of the being, I think it sort of nudges you into the consciousness of what is actually supposed to be who you are. And I always talk to people about being truthful to who you are, being authentic, and being real. So if you're not any of those things, how do you want to be respected, and how do you want to be appreciated? How possibly could you ask for those things when you're not being those things yourself? So I try to, as much as I possibly can, to sort of see where the wound is, and the wound is never on the surface, ever. It's only when you start checking in with who you are. So if you're like going through life and thinking that, boy, you know, I feel like my life, this is it. Is this it? I'm just going to work, come back, and I pay a car note, I pay a mortgage. But is this it? So if there's something sort of still like lingering there, you know, and it's not being satisfied in the way that is that no money can ever satisfy, then that's when I think that's when that sort of that moment in life says is to check in with you, to truly, I mean, truly, and however you check in with that is. I think I think every individual is all different, but I think that the common thing is that you're checking in and there's something there that you think is missing when probably you just haven't tapped into it and it's already there.
How do you cultivate that? It sounds to me that one of the things that you're very much aware of and in tune with is the fact that we speak much more in the nonverbal than in the verbal. And so, for example, when you are approaching someone who is very hardened and is having a lot of troubles and difficulties in their life, and of course their basic needs aren't even being met in many ways, how do you approach that with an open heart?
Well, I've done a little bit of training as well. So we find that there are some people that you will probably never get to for various reasons. So what you do is you don't talk to them initially. You allow whatever first words come out be their words. So if you're like coming to a place where you know, because homeless people for the most part, the ones that are truly chronically homeless, they are in sort of the same places all the time because that's their community. So they see you enough because it's about building trust at this moment. I mean, truly, you can go and see them for a whole year and you never two words get passed between you. But you know that this person needs help. So what do you wait for them? Because they do eventually open up. And when they open up, oh, my God, it's like a floodgate. So you have to be ready at that point because it's going to be probably some things that the things that they're requesting is going to be sort of not in, you don't see it coming. So what you have to do is be very gentle. You have to be truly open and be a very, very good listener. So I try to do all those things, and I may not do anything in that moment. So that first time they open up, I'm like excited on the inside, but I'm not going to do anything because doing something is not what they're looking for. The first thing is they really want you to listen to. Really, I mean, it's not what they say to you for the most part. It's what they're not saying to you. So I'm looking at all the signs, and so you've been out here for a year, or you've been out here for 2 weeks, or you know, and you've done this and you've done that. So I'm calculating in my mind, how am I going to best help this person? What is this person's real need? Am I going to get him or her to a place of safety for just temporary? Am I going to try to help them work to get some income, like something from the state or the federal government? I'm going to try to get them with a clinician of sorts to help them with their, you know. So I'm hearing all this, even though it could be through some anger. But my role, I think, and anyone's role that approaches this in a way, is definitely you have to listen with your heart more than with your ears, I guess would be the bottom line. So and with that, you will hear things that you didn't expect to hear, but you kind of knew it was coming, but you're just sort of trying to, like a puzzle, you're trying to put it in the right place so that they can get the help that they truly need.
And Gwen, that's amazing. And it leads me into the field that we're in. It's of this collective transformation that we're in right now. I think most of us are very deeply aware of the fact that something significant is happening in our world right now, and it involves consciousness. It involves a shift in perspective, in lens. And given that the frame for today is deepening our understanding of the homeless, how is that a two-way street? You know, there's a lot of stigma that has been wrapped around the homeless. There's a lot of misunderstandings, and embedded in many who appear to be the forgotten are great wisdoms. And so I'm wondering if we could talk about the consciousness shift that we're in and where you've seen us as we've been in consciousness, and where we're going. What are we integrating or maybe even bridging right now?
You know what? That's a very good question, and we talk about this quite a bit. I don't, from a personal and a professional viewpoint, you see lots of organizations that are really trying to bridge and partner with people who, businesses, for example, schools, corporations, and just sort of a collective consciousness about, and it's more than just about, volunteering and donating your time. What I try to do with young people for the most part is to try to go deeper. Okay, so if you had, and I talk about it as if it was in their own family, so if you had an uncle or an aunt or someone that is really struggling and they don't have a place to live, you know, what would be some of the first things that you would start to do? Would you just like have them, you know, just like give them money all the time? No. Would you try to get some help on a larger scale for people like them? Hopefully. They hadn't thought about it like that. They just wanted, you know, they're just dealing with the one-on-one. Well, the one-on-one sort of, it works in a nonprofit sort of arena, but as collectivists as a whole, we're not doing our sort of on a larger scale. You know, I'm not going to speak for all organizations because I think everyone's doing a wonderful job at what they can do because a lot of it comes from funding and philanthropy and, you know, corporations giving money to foundations, to grants, et cetera. But, I mean, as far as the individuals and our consciousness and how our society is being sort of transformed and allowing this to be business as normal, and this is usual, homelessness is normal, and it's not, how do we change that? So we talk about that a lot, and we try to start from the homeless person's perspective initially to see, okay, what is it that we're missing as providers that you need? and then sort of it goes around sort of a think tank, and then, you know, then it goes somewhere else, and then other people start talking about it. But then here's the deal, what happens with all that, the consciousness and trying to get the communities that live in different areas that are not affected by the poverty or homeless issues in their neighborhoods, we try to bring them all to the table. A lot of times that doesn't happen because they just want to give money and that's it, but that's not it. And we want to talk to our developers who are building these new places that are so far out, you know, cost for anybody who makes less than, you know, minimum wage. You just can't afford it. So we need everyone at the table, so to speak, to really talk from truth and really talk mm-hmm. about how we're moving this country, because where this country is, we're sort of, for me, historically, as I look at it, overall, we're in the 200 and some year of America being in existence. We have not moved so much as far as our human consciousness, because we've allowed other things to sort of to breathe what we should be doing and how we should move and how much money we should be making and how competitive we should be. And we're not really thinking about the true spirit of the energy that sort of makes a country or community a community.
Beloved Martin, I have to just put this in here. This is so alive right now around what Martin Luther King Jr., beloved brother Martin, said once about, well, more than just once, about beloved community. Mm-hmm. And from that perspective of our social responsibility matching up also with our consciousness into action that is aligned mm-hmm. with the principles. And mm-hmm. I just wonder if you have some thoughts on how our consciousness is shifting as it concerns the worldview of, and, you know, again, the stigma attached around homelessness and how we might be moving towards more of a unified worldview and a social responsibility that underpins the essence of what Martin Luther King was speaking towards and enacting.
Well, that's it in a nutshell. You probably said it all, because what happens is, I'm serious, because we can talk a good game. We can talk intellectually yeah. about this whole thing. We can put it in research and, you know, okay, so now where's the action? Okay, we know, and we always talk about, okay, so we know what the issues are. We've seen report after report after report. We've seen research after research. So what are we doing? What are we doing, people? I'm talking about the whole people. How do we stop the divisiveness? How do we stop the injustices? How do we create? We as human beings do this. We do this very well all the time. So how do we create all that? We can do this. And I don't have the answer, but it comes from collective minds.
Mm-hmm.
So people mm-hmm. from all arenas, I'm serious, every aspect, whether it's from the environment to the geological to the astrological, whatever, everybody has to come to the table. Everyone. It can't be just a few. And it's probably why the movement has been so slow, because there's mm-hmm. only such a handful of people doing it.
Well, there's so many people that feel disempowered, I believe, at this time, too, as it concerns government and actually having a voice. And I think that we probably, many of us here today, share that feeling of disempowerment to a certain degree as it concerns direct access to what have been the old ways of change making. And so what I'm hearing today from you and feeling deeply is this sense of the ability for us to, from the ground up, from our hearts and collective actions, create something together that moves us in a direction that perhaps our consciousness is going as well. And that's collective responsibility and an understanding that what I do affects all of us, and what you do affects all of us. And
absolutely.
Not only that, that we have this responsibility to one another as beloved community. And I, you know, I want to throw in here something, if I might, that I think is a really important question that came from the collective field today, the circle present, mm-hmm, which mm-hmm. I know that we're going to be sharing with here shortly. And that's the hearing that you were present at, I believe, on March 17th, regarding the Berkeley Council considering punitive measures as it concerns the homeless. And I wonder if you might share with us where that's at right now. And it's SB what? What's the bill number again, or the measure number?
Yeah, no, it's Senate Bill, I think it's 605, I think it is.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So that one, yes, we work with we're a member of an organization called RAP, and they are located as a regional social justice advocacy project program that works on social justice issues. But the particular one, that's like a sideline of what we're doing on the state level. So this particular one, where we're at the city council, was a local level. So this is in Berkeley, California, which is where I work. So the council decides that they're going to they're going to criminalize the homeless for breathing, for the most part, because what it means is if they're standing too long, sitting too long, breathing too long, eating with someone, praying with someone, we're going to penalize them for doing that. So when you penalize them, what does that say? You don't want them around. You're saying that you're an obstruction. You're an eyesore. You gotta go. So we're gonna cite you with whatever they're gonna cite. Well, here's the deal. When you cite them with some for payment to go to court, then that sort of all that feeds into them having more barriers to being housed. So when someone's looking at them, they say, well, you need citation for this and citation for that. We can't have you in our building. Well, here's the deal. What we did as advocates, we went to city council and we spoke out. We, meaning the homeless community and advocates and social justice, everybody that are there that's working on behalf of the homeless population, said that by doing this, you are discriminating, because what you're saying is the homeless are the only ones that you're targeting. Now, we have other people like me and you and other people that stand every day in the same spot the homeless are. We have other people that sit in the same spot and we're not fined. So what does that mean? So you're targeting them. You're targeting them unjustly. So, and this needs to stop. So where is it at right now? Nothing has really been done because so many people spoke out, and this was at a city council meeting maybe about a month or two ago. So we came there in numbers, and numbers count because I do a lot of community organizing. So we go in numbers. It means you get hurt more. You go one person or two people, you're normally not hurt. It gets shelled. So we went in numbers and we said, you know what, this is hurting us. You know, so if you're not going to help us with housing or make it some way where we can work towards getting housed, and you're criminalizing us, so that just means that, you know, we're just not going to be going anywhere. So you push us out, you give us a ticket or whatever, and then we're back the next day. So you do the same thing all over again. So you can find better use of the policeman, law enforcement's time than to just ticket us every time you see us standing, sitting, praying, eating in public space, which is what everyone does.
So we currently inhabit a society and a system, it appears, that warehouse the unwanted, or push them away to the very peripherals, if that could even be said.
Living on the margins.
Right, right. And a moment ago you said something really profound. You said 200 years, in 200 years of existence of this country, we haven't moved far in human consciousness because we focused on other priorities.
Mm-hmm.
Those priorities, I'm sure, include the industrialization and the focus on material as almost an identity. And we seem to have lost our way in so far that it's almost a place where it's unfathomable how to recapture. But I feel that you are providing answers, even though I know you don't have all the answers, mm-hmm. to the way back. And I just wonder, you know, is there anything else that around the themes of that I heard with you the other day around wound as gift, people's lives mattering, all of us.
And you know what? You know what? Well, the thing is, it's so simple. It's as simple as breathing.
Mm.
I hate to use it in such simple terms, because what it costs to be kind to someone, what it costs to be true to someone, what it costs to be, you know, to love someone, it's immeasurable.
And
so where
was something
that go?
Too that you spoke.
Yeah,
to.
Where did that go though? Where?
Right.
Try to look in history somewhere. Okay, we've had a lot of the things that have hurt us, Achilles' heels, I call them, throughout our history. But that should not replace kindness and family and unity and making sure everyone gets a fair shot or gets a fair share of the whatever the resources and services are. So that's what is really. When did we move really? I'm talking about consciously and as a society. When did we move? When was this big shift where it just sort of abruptly said, no more of that, and then we're just going to do this?
Mm.
You know, and I don't know where that was, but it happened, because it happened, and it happened, and it wasn't such the abruptness of it. It was the subtlety of it that sort of, like, moved us to wanting more, wanting it to be bigger, wanting it to be more expensive, more, you know, and all these things instead of the really simple things. I really adore people who are, and we're even talking about, like, you know, these portable houses and things, too. Someone that only needs so much space to live in and still thrive. And whatever that means, it doesn't mean having this big house and this big yard and this big car. It means really satisfying the truth of who you are. And that is it's so simple. And if we sort of get, as a nation, and put our arms around just that notion, I think that's just a little part of moving back toward, you know, what works for humanity. So this is truly about a humanity issue versus
mm-hmm.
anything.
Mm.
Anything that you can come up with, it's really about, and it's sacred for the most part. And we've lost that sacredness. We replaced it with stuff.
And it's incredible how much attention is wrapped around the maintenance of keeping up in ways that are not sustainable to the human spirit. It's amazing how much time and energy and lifetimes even are spent in keeping up with the Joneses and keeping up with this idea that material profit and gain trumps the human spirit. And I just want to, I know we're going to be shifting here into Q&A in a moment, but I want to just give a chance here for you to speak to that aspect of attention and intention, and especially surrounding perhaps any of our beautiful folks with us today who might be wondering about their own path and about their own lives around finding their own way and cultivating that out into what might be called ahimsa or sarvodaya or love in action.
I fully believe in it. May sometimes I always say it's sort of by accident, but nothing is by accident. It's but my true belief. I think all of what we do in some respect is intentional. So if we intentionally want to live in a certain neighborhood, then our energy is going to be put into that. So it's where our intention, where we put our energy, that sort of blossoms whatever is supposed to come out of that. So if my energy is going to something that is very materialistic, for example, then I'm going to sort of put more into that than to put more into the social awareness, consciousness, et cetera, because I'm being selfish right now. This is about me. Instead of being about, as you mentioned earlier, this is not just about me. It's about how I take care of myself and then how I can be able to share and to help take care of others in a way that is not detrimental to me nor to them. So I think if we, I just think we need to sharpen, the intentional part is to sort of sharpen what's inside of us already. And oftentimes we don't know what that is. But I think life sort of unfolds itself if we're paying we have to pay attention to things, I guess is the bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
Let's pay attention to, okay, you see something that looks out of sorts or a little, you know, like it's out of place. What is it doing in this town? I've never seen that before. Okay, so there's a sign right there. There's something right there. So, okay, so the homeless person ends up in your community that you've never seen one, but golly, he stands out like a sore thumb. We got to get our congressman and get him out of here. No, that's not what that is, people. That's not what that is. That's this person who is being pushed out of a community that he once probably thrived in, who might have been a scientist of sorts, that just lost his way. I mean, you know, there's all kinds of reasons. But they end up in a different era because they've been pushed out. And now, but when you come into your neighborhood, you don't want them there because they're, you know, for whatever the reasons, we all know what those are. But that's not it. Okay, there's something right there that you see about that man who ends up on that corner under that bridge near your house. There's a reason for that. So let's pay attention to that. So instead of pushing him back around and having him shovel, you know, his stuff to another place, what do you need to do in a positive way? How do you, and so if you're going to call your legislator to say, get him out of here, no, you need to be calling your legislator and say, how can I help so that this person doesn't and other people are not like that? What can I do? How can I help? What am I supposed, what is my role in this? Just do a check. Do a self-check at this moment because that person ended up there for a reason. He or she really did. And it wasn't because of to be an eyesore.
And you said
it's something in our society that's not correct that continues to perpetuate this.
You shared something profound with me the other day when we were sharing about all of this, and it was about the stories that are behind each of us. We have, you know, and it interrelates with what you've shared today, of course, but how do we open into that ability to understand that there's much more informing someone, and how does that help us to open up to the empathic and to the consciousness that, in fact, that person is not identified by their homelessness or by the fact that they're incarcerated or you name it, but rather by a story that has informed their journey. And that seems to be kind of the edge of where we're at right now in transforming as a culture in such a deep way. And
yeah. Well, here's what I know, and here's sort of my truth as well. So, and when you meet someone, and I talk about this a lot too, the homelessness does not define them. And a lot of people look at homelessness as it being something that to who they are. But it's an experience for the most part, because we have, you know, the two sides of homelessness. We have the chronically homeless, and then we have those who are temporarily dealing with some setbacks and need some housing and need some help and, you know, to get back on their feet where there's a job and you help them get housing and help, you know, for whatever other things that they really need. So what I hear and see quite often, and this is not from the homeless community, this is from other people that view the homelessness. They view this as that's who they are. Well, that's what they do. Or they can't help it, and it's like, you know, that's just what, you know, part of what they get. And I cringe every time I hear this. So now here comes my educator's hat on once again to say, no, it's not, you know what? Were you listening to that person? Did you even take the time to sort of talk us through, see what their journey was? Because oftentimes the people that I come in contact with were working people, were taxpayers. They had a house or an apartment. They had a full-time job. I mean, they had all these wonderful things, and something happened, and it sort of abruptly changed their lives for the moment. So the thing is to sort of describe them or to characterize them in a certain way, and homeless has this connotation that it's so negative, it's so nasty, it's so this. When behind all of those people, every last one of them have a story. I don't care whether they live with their mother or father or all their lives and they lost their home through eminent domain or whatever. There's a lot of story. Then you get to unravel some of those. I always look at it like this. I'm like, okay, what if this was someone in my family? I almost do. I almost So, you know, so I guess that's where my collective consciousness comes. Like, I could be related to every last one of these people, from the children up to the grandfathers. What if that was my family? How, you know, what am I going to do? How do I help them? How do I get my family to help them? I have family members still back home that are like, I have to, like, they say things, and I have to, like, whoa, you know, hold up. That's not how it is. They'll say, well, that homeless person, blah, blah. I'm like, why would you say that?
Mm-hmm.
So it's about education. I do a lot of education. I mean, to people who say they don't know a homeless person, but then all of a sudden they'll call me at work and say, you know, can I talk to you for, I got a friend of mine who is, you know, who's homeless. He won't tell anybody, but he really, he's going to get kicked out of his house or whatever. So I have to deal, I have to say, well, what have you said? Or I have a father that calls me and said he wants to put his son in a shelter because he can't handle him anymore.
Oh, goodness.
Something is wrong with that. So the thing is, I guess what I'm trying to say is, there's a story behind every, so I told that father on the phone, I'm like, you know, don't do that. You know, try whatever you need to do. I said, I don't know what your situation is, and I can't tell you what to do. But the last thing you want is your child, when he already has a home, to be in a shelter. Don't do that. You know, find ways, you know, get him some help through medical, whatever you need to do, but don't do that. Because it's really, 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 really hard, not just for kids, but for everybody. So just understand that there's a story with everyone, and just not being homeless. People label on someone to say, and then you have like a dictionary or thesaurus that says this is homeless and this is what it means. No, it really, that's not it. So we need to, as a society, move away from that descriptor. Because homelessness, yeah, you know what I'm saying?
And Gwen, I believe that is a beautiful springboard for passing the virtual talking stick back to Devin, and also just the possibility of sharing a little bit more about the aha moments that you've had internally that have mapped out in your service journey. So we'll go back to Devin for a moment to transition to our greater circle.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Molly. And wow, what a conversation. And I love that quote that one of our volunteers, Miki, captured, actually. And that is, homelessness is not an identity. It is not who they are.
Right.
It is where they are at the moment. It's more of
absolutely
an experience. And so well said. So well said, in the spirit of consciousness and the human spirit. And with that, Gwen and Molly, if I may, let's go to our first caller. We have a question or a comment here.
Hi there. It's,
hi.
This is Nicole. I'm calling in from Denver, Colorado. And I have to preface this, like, my emotions are actually really, really on today. So, but I first just want to thank you for the stories, and so much has come up for me and just listening. And I felt like sharing, and a former student of mine might be on the call, and I'm going to share his story for me, and I would love to invite him to continue sharing after if he is on the call. But he told me the other day that he has that same call as you do, Gwen. It's just like, it's so clear to him. It's working with the homeless and being that, and yet he feels like he can't make a difference, and that it's and that causes a lot of pain and it stalls him. And I've heard that a lot, along with a lot of fear from other people in my sphere. And I think in that there's some stories to share of what people can do. And you were talking about action. And I know that one thing that I do is I'm just a friend. I don't have any money that I can give. And my time is not necessarily, like, my call is part of what you are doing, but it's not fully. And so what I can do is give an hour or two a week. And I actually have one of my dearest friends is homeless, and we spend 2 hours every Sunday morning, going on a walk, or we go to church together. I drive him to church, which is across town that he couldn't get to. And that's what I can give. And I had to ask myself a lot of questions. You know, do I give that time to a shelter and make food, or and there are some internal questions to ask, and that's what I came to, was I can just really be a friend, and really sit with someone and ongoing over time and be a friend to them just like I would any other friend. And so many beautiful things have blossomed out of that friendship and mutual support. It's not, I think a lot of people say, well, I can give to them. And quite honestly, I've gotten so much from this man and his wisdom and his ideas and dreams and the way he sees the world. And it's propelled me to move forward. And I just felt like sharing that and thanking you for the work that you do and sharing these stories, because I really do think it helps give an answer to people that are called and maybe are stalled. And how to take that first step. So thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you. You know, I wanted to add also, so part of my journey was to make sure that I lived in my truth. So when you see me anywhere, I'm that same person. I'm not no different than when I'm in a council meeting at a microphone than I am talking to a homeless person on the streets. So what I've done, I've been recently asked, and I've just sort of, I was telling Molly about this, I've been asked to be a mentor. It's in a mentor program for those who were recently homeless and or foster care, aged out, et cetera, and they're going to the local high school. And they're in the high school through the McKinney-Vento Act, and I'm sure a lot of people you know about that, and it helps children go to school, and you know. But anyway, so I've been asked, an executive director of one of the community funds, it's called High Hope Scholar. They've asked me to be a mentor to a young lady for 4 years, so I commit myself to 4 years. And this young lady and her family used to live in their car. And they now live in a shelter, probably a transitional housing place. And so I'm going to sort of nurture and build her self-esteem, her character, and whatever else that I can support her non-financially. And I think you hit it on the head about being a friend, being someone there that they can talk to. And this is someone who was probably not even destined to go and probably graduate high school. So I'm sort of honored and proud to be a part of that program. There are like 20, each year they give a scholarship to 25 young people that are going to college who have had some very difficult life living situations. So this year they said this is the first year that they've given 27, because they all of them were, the stories were so powerful. And they need someone to help nurture them to get through, because for the most part, they're the first ones to go to college in their family, and the families don't understand anything about college. So I just wanted to put that out there. When you said that you were just a friend, I think that's wonderful, and I think that is a really good start, because you can do a whole lot of things, but I think the one thing is that human connection, to make sure that they know that they're not forgotten and they're not a throwaway, and they are just not a snag in our society. You know, there's somebody important. There's someone special, because it's not going to always be like that. I have another family that I forgot to mention who also has, it's a father that lost a mother who has 3 children. And he finally got them in school, and I see them, and we had a youth awards sort of celebration, not because anyone got A's and B's and all this stuff. It's because they were staying the course. These young people from 14 to 21 were staying the course. They stayed motivated and stayed in school, and now they're graduating. So for the most part, you know, we celebrated them. We let them know we love you and we care about you and we want you to do well. So 4 of the young people got $1,000 to continue their education. And this all came from donations, people who are actually understanding that young people are our future. You know, we need to really put our arms around them so they don't fall off and be a statistic back in, you know, whether it's the criminal justice system or wherever, that they don't need to be. They need to be flourishing in school somewhere. So I'm a part of that program as well for the next 4 years. So that's another part of giving something back and staying true to who I am.
How sweet. How sweet.
Yeah.
And Nicole, the story that you shared about being with your friend, it's resonating to me so well. It's rhyming so well with a couple of comments that we had this week in our weekly reflections. Right? One of them is from Carol, and she has shared that, "I have heard from more than one homeless person that sharing some time and lunch together on a bench and share a story or talk about the day is valued.
Yes.
I try to plan to do this when I know I'll be walking through certain areas. I bring extra sandwiches and drinks." It's just so, so beautifully shared. And we have one more share from Nixie, and that is, "Rather than judging and trying to figure out if this person is genuinely in need, I remind myself that God says I sent angels to watch over the hairs of my salvation. This makes giving easy, since it is my sacred duty to love my brother."
That's right.
It's so beautifully shared. And
I agree.
You agree. Just so well shared. And let me get to our next caller in the queue.
Hello, my name is Robert. I'm from Northern California, and I have pretty much gone through everything in your guys' book that you're talking about. I have been on top and had everything to having nothing, and I believe that is why I'm doing what I'm trying to accomplish here in my community today. I'm currently trying to support a benefit for the youth of our community and kind of clean up. Just starting now, just in Ukiah, California. Recently been cleaning up around here, just going, doing my part. If I see trash on the ground, I pick it up, you know, and I'm trying to show the youth in our community to be selfless, to care for one another, to care for our world, to care for everyone and everything that is our world.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yes, I do.
All of us made a community effort as one to come together, you know, as, you know, instead of taking all those material things, your big house and your five cars and, you know, there's two people living there, and you got five cars. You don't need all that, so why not share it? Why not move your whole entire family in there, you know? I mean, if you got the money to do that and you see other people struggling, why can't you sacrifice to help someone, you know? And I don't have a lot, but I'm still giving what I can, which is knowledge and experience back to the community. I just want to know kind of like, what are we going to do as a community to make something like this happen, you know? I mean, all this is good talk and everything, but actually doing something about it is a completely different story.
I couldn't agree with you more, and justice is real slow in this country. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. If we all just, you know, took a stand and spoke clearly with our voice, with our feet planted firmly, and proposed a way to try and change this, it starts out small, you know, town by town, community by community, state by state. But if we slowly work our way to accomplishing this, I believe we can.
I'm on your bandwagon. I'm one of those people who's a total optimist about social change, and I think if collectively, it's small steps. It always is. I always talk about this because nothing happens overnight, and so we're working these things that we're working at right now. We've been working at for like years, and it can sort of take its toll on you. But you've got to be true to yourself and know that, just like you said,
this can change. This can happen.
Wow, wow. And this is actually resonating so deeply and so nicely and so easily as well, actually, with what we preach and do and pursue and explore in service space. There is the quote from Mahatma Gandhi, Gandhiji, be the change you wish to see in the world. And I heard so many times that it's a small thing. Small is beautiful. And so it's like you don't need to make like big attempts and big initiatives. Just do little something where you are, and that ripple can travel. And we have wonderful stories around it as well. So, and so thank you for sharing this, and thank you for this beautiful sharing, question. Gwen, we have one more comment and a question that came over email.
Okay.
And that is, so the question is, Gwen, thanks for your passionate work for the homeless. Do you have a personal practice so you don't get overwhelmed by the problem of society? Do you think inner change counts, or is it only good to the degree that it creates external change?
Well, I'll answer the first question, the first part first. I do have a practice. Every morning I spend about an hour meditating, and I read, I have a daily Bible that I read. And I read, there's a, every day there's something, there's a story from chapters in the book, in the Bible. And I'll read that. I might go three or four pages and I'll read that. And then I have another book, and this is every morning that I do. I have a book called, and maybe most of you have heard of it, it's called The Book of Awakening by Mark Nepo. So I read that daily so I get a sort of refresh myself. I pray, literally pray on my knees every morning for God to give me the strength, the endurance to sustain today's date and that on my journey today, put in me what he wants others to see though, so that they can be beautiful people as well. So just give me the strength to get through the day, to be myself, and to work and, the way God wants me to work through this. So, yes, that's my every single day. And then I just joined a health club, so I'm doing, I'm working out maybe three or four times a week. So I'm doing that because I do want to sort of, I have a personal bucket list. I want to run a marathon next year, so.
Wow.
Yeah. I know, right? So I'm trying to take care of me. So when I, if I'm telling people to take care of themselves so they can take, you know, so they can be better people, then I need to start doing it. Well, I've been doing it anyway. I've done this all my life. But I sort of, when I first started doing this work, I really went full force and went right into it. And I sort of didn't work out. I stopped running, you know, because I was an avid runner. And I just, you know, because I was going to all kinds of meetings and meeting with legislators and meeting with people, doing a class, going to, you know. So I said, well, hold up. I need to really, and, but I didn't stop my morning practice. My morning practice has always been, has been with me almost forever in my life. But it just, it deepened once I started doing this work. And I understand it because, you know why? I started to understand what God's purpose is. I truly started to get it. And I needed to be a better steward. I needed to show that through me, things can happen through him. So that's why I'm optimistic. I'm always, I just know, and it's a slow change. I don't rush it. I just know that, because there's so many players on this planet that has a lot to do with how things move. So we're just one piece of that puzzle, but we try to make a force out of being that one piece. So we go to the, I go to a lot of meetings. I go to a lot of city council meetings. I go to a lot of transportation meetings, a lot of food justice meetings, a lot of, you know, because I want to make sure that there is a voice there for those who can't get to those meetings. Because without those voices, the, you know, our legislators and policymakers don't hear what's really going on. So, you know, that's what I do. So,
I love it. I love that thought on stewardship, and that's my anchor for Shreya's call. I love the thought. If I may ask you a question, Gwen, being a little too greedy of a host. And my question is, as you have worked with homeless people over the years and for all the work that you've done in legislature and all, over the years, how has it created a shift in you? Like, for example, what change do you see in yourself now, for example, compared to 10 or 15 years ago?
Oh, my God. 10, 15 years ago, I didn't even know any of this existed. I didn't. I'm going to be very, very honest.
Wow.
I did not. 10, 15 years ago, I was working in corporate. I was making money. I was with the audience and the people that made a lot of money. So I didn't see the homeless. I didn't see the poor. I didn't see what I can read about it, and then it's on the news. But you know what? It sort of just went through me. So my whole everything, the way I look at every little thing, literally, has changed my view on because everything, I connect everything with people who are poor. Everything that happens, whether they're building a building, whether people are sick, whether people are the roadways, the environment, and the rivers, oceans, I look at everything and I connect it with what my role is as being an advocate for the poor and the homelessness. Everything, from cars to transport,
wow.
Everything. So I go to, you know, and this brings up a really, really nice story, another segue kind of thing. I went to a board transportation meeting, and you go there and you speak out about the issues in the neighborhoods about transportation. Well, I was going to speak out on behalf of a community that didn't make it, and I happened to make it, but there were some other people there who were also talking, and I stood back, and so I was telling Molly, I said, I think I'm a better listener sometimes than I am a talker. So I stood back because it was like five of us getting ready to go to the microphone. But I let these three other people go because I wanted to hear their voices. And their voices was much, you know, was more to me. Now, other people say, well, I wish they would have spoke. I couldn't understand them. You know, what were they saying? They were like, huh? But I understood it perfectly. And they were homeless people talking about their, you know, the bus doesn't come to their neighborhood often enough, or you're getting ready to go up on the prices and you can't do that because most of us, you know, whatever the reasons were. I just felt that their story, being up there, even though everybody thought it was like, oh, God, here we go again, I didn't think that way. I thought they have something to share. They are important, and their voices need to be heard. So from that,
to
make the long story short, whatever it was, the issue that they were going to do, the board was going to do, they didn't do it because of those voices. So if they were going to cut a line, they didn't cut that line because they came up there and talk passionately about why you shouldn't. So that's important.
Right.
Yeah, that's really, that,
right,
that,
right.
That hit home for me. It's like, oh, my God, I need to bring more of them with me. I'm just saying, because I could have said it differently. I was going to say it differently. But I think how they said it was even more impactful. So
right,
they, people
right.
are important. We're all important. So I don't try to, I want people to know that these are people. They're not throwaways. These are part of our society. Society has decided to throw them away. We haven't, as communities.
Wow. Wow. What a shift in paradigm, and what an enlightening way to look at it from your perspective. And so thankful for the answer, Quinn. And I just noticed we have one more question that came over email, I think.
Okay.
It was probably towards the beginning of the call. And the question is, in Honolulu, they just started a program for rolling homeless shelters from old buses, which have about 6 to 8 beds. Is that something Berkeley could use? So that's one question. Excuse me. And then the second question is, my kids' choir at church adopted a grandparent in a nursing home nearby years ago. Is this something we could do as adults in the form of a shared space or small gifts, but one-on-one?
Yes and yes. I think those are both wonderful ideas, and I know Honolulu, Hawaii in particular, has a huge homeless problem because everybody just wants to go there because of the weather. But it's a problem nonetheless. So how do you take care of your homeless? So the thing is, we're always concerned about being outside in the elements, for example. No one should be living on the street. So we need to house people. So the rolling beds thing I think you mentioned, I don't know. I don't know if it's probably good for Hawaii because Hawaii is such a, you know, the weather is so great there. But in other parts of the world, in the country, especially in the U.S., it's not. And the shared living space, I think, is a one. We try to do that all the time. It's an excellent, wonderful way to sort of understand people. But you know what? You also have to give people responsibilities, too. They have to make them accountable. So if you're going to open up and share your space with someone that you have the space to do, you also make them accountable for whatever. Maybe mow the lawn or, you know, take the trash out. Something to make them useful. So no one wants it. So going back to this fair change and real change, so no one wants that sort of, okay, I'm glad you did this, but they really, I mean, deep down, they really want to feel that they're contributing and they're part of something. So they don't want you always to feel sorry for them, but they need the help. I don't think anyone gets through this world without some help from somebody somewhere. And theirs may be just a little bit more than others, but still, the help that they want is the real stuff. They want to feel like they are part of something, and that's why they build communities outside on the streets, and you know, because that's their family for the most part. You know, but we don't want them on the street. We want them to be housed. We want them to think. We want them to know that we care. Our society cares about people who are unable to, for whatever reason, take care of themselves. We care about you.
That's not hard to me. Give them sense of contribution. Like when they feel they're contributing something meaningful as well, then that's
yes.
An empowerment, and they feel part of it. And that's the balanced way to solve the problem. And how well said, Gwen. And thank you for all the share. As we are wrapping our call, we always like to ask this question, and so I'll go ahead and ask you as well, Gwen.
Okay.
On behalf of all of us, Service Space volunteers and the community that we have, what can we do for you in your crusade for helping homeless and all the things that you do?
Speak out, speak up. Lots of things help through voting. So I'm a policy person also. So my big thing when I went to college was about social policy as well. So you need to speak up, speak out, talk to the homeless. I mean, you never know what stories you might get out of it. But the thing is, try to, I'm not saying don't ever give anything to them. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying help them more than just that. And find ways in the community that you live in, what's really the barriers, what's really the Achilles heels of the community. What is the holdback? What are we really talking about? A lot of times you find out those things at city council meetings or at other type of community meetings. What is it that we can do to make our community better? And making our community better doesn't mean throwing people away. It means to help people be the better them, whatever that is. If they know how to do one thing in life, believe me, everybody I've met knows how to do one thing well. Well, let's try to tap into that. Maybe we can't get them that job. Well, we can get close to something, volunteer somewhere, get a fellowship somewhere, you know, help them do internships.
Right,
I don't know. But make them feel like they're part of the community instead of, you know, an exile, you know.
Right. And what a call to action. And I love this
yes.
call to action, how inspiring, which is just look for ways to get them back mainstream. And the way to do that is see how they can contribute and how they can use the skills in doing something or creating something meaningful. It's so, so well said.
Yeah.
Gwen, thank you so much for today's
Thanks,
call.
Thanks, Devin.
And what we like to do towards the end of the call is like I have a minute of gratitude and just collectively ground yourself and let all the thoughts and reflections settle. So 1 minute of quiet reflection, please. Moment of gratitude for a minute, please. So all of our callers, if you would join me in thanking Gwen on count of three. On count of three, please. One, two, three. Thank you, Gwen.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you. Thank you. Namaste.
You're very welcome. It's been my pleasure.
Bye. Thank you all for today's call. And talk to you all next week on our Awakening Call, next week, Saturday at 9 a.m. PST. Thank you very much.